to the InfoWars Nightly News. It's Tuesday, February 4th, 2014. I'm Leanne McAdoo, and here's what's coming up tonight.
Tonight is 2014, the year the economy finally crashes, crumbling the matrix reality we live in. And we get a glimpse into what a militarized police state looks like. And NASA seeks corporate funding to send a robot to the moon in search of new corporate ventures. All this and more on the InfoWars Nightly News.
Well, we move from one televised terror threat to another. This week, it's going to be all eyes on the Winter Olympics. Now the International Crisis Group is predicting a terror attack to take place in Sochi during the Winter Olympics. Russian authorities, of course, believe that the threat may come from the Muslim North Caucasus, which is where an insurgency is currently underway. And, of course, that's where Prince Bandar bin Sultan of Saudi Arabia threatened to move his rebels in if Putin didn't play ball. But no, this threat is now coming from the IGC. They believe that the threats against the games are going to arise elsewhere, saying radicals can come from any region of Russia. Now, the reason why this should cause some concern is that the IGC is a non-government organization founded by members of the Internationalist Carnegie Endowment for International Peace and the World Bank, as if those two go together. Now, it's funded by governments and corporate foundations. Its advisory board is dominated by Chevron, Shell, and other transnational corporations. But George Soros sits on the IGC board of trustees. Of course, he's directly implicated in funding the pro-EU activists in the Ukraine during that current uprising. Now, so here we have George Soros. He's a man whose company rolled out the naked body scanners almost immediately following that false flag terror threat with the underwear bomber. Now, all of a sudden, he's curiously there where another terror attack is supposed to take place, probably salivating with the thought of the potential profits that can be made there. And basically, these are the same groups who are sending in rebels to destabilize other regions and other areas, much like Saudi Arabia has threatened to do to Putin during the Olympic Games. So we have all these globalists are kind of salivating here, wondering how they can go ahead, destabilize the region, make a big problem, and then sweep in to clean it up. Maybe Soros is hoping that Russia is going to hope to, you know, purchase all the naked body scanners that aren't working for us here in America. But who knows? I mean, that's what these globalists do. And historically, they create the problem and then they want to go in and fix it. So are they predicting a terror threat that they're going to create? Now, that's something I'd bet money on. But you know what? Just don't worry about it. Everything is fine. But there is a Harvard economist that disagrees with that. He just took $1 million out of Bank of America, and he said he's probably going to go ahead and create a bank run on Bank of America because of that. Now, this is a Burnham. He's an ardent critic of the Fed. He writes, "Why do I risk starting a run on Bank of America by withdrawing my money and presuming that many fellow depositors will read this and rush to withdraw too? Because they pay me zero interest." Now, Burnham explains that Bank of America may be unwilling or unable to return his money should one of a number of different circumstances arise, such as depositors demanding their money back en masse, or if the investments of which 90% of depositors' money Bank of America has loaned out to cover go bust. So, I mean, here's this guy. He's got $1 million in the bank, and basically, it'd be better off if he just stuck that money in under his bed in a mattress, because when he goes to take it out, the bank will put these capital controls on it and say, "I'm sorry, we need that to cover these risky investments that we made with your money that we pay you zero interest on." Silly American, what were you thinking? But in addition, he points out that the FDIC, which everyone feels so secure, you know, putting their money in the bank because they guaranteed to insure deposits up to $250,000. He points out the FDIC only has about $41 billion in reserve against $6 trillion in insured deposits. So, I mean, you can do the math there. Now, this Harvard economist, he pins the blame on the government intervention and specifically Ben Bernanke and the Federal Reserve for pursuing absurd quantitative easing policies. He says it's going to unravel in the U.S. as it has every other time it has been tried, from Weimar Germany to Robert Mugabe's Zimbabwe. Now, another elite insider also agrees with Burnham. He was one who predicted the massive economic crash in 2012. He says now that there's a very large probability that the real end-of-the-world scenario might come March 4th, 2014. He says the doomsday clock will ring then because the U.S. economy may fully crash around that date, which will in turn bring down all world economies and all hope of any recovery for the foreseeable future. Now, he predicts that interest rates will skyrocket, businesses will fail, unemployment will go to record levels, of course, material and food shortages, and major social unrest. Now, he goes on to say that any wishful thinking that America is in a recovery and that things are getting better is an illusion because a run on the bank would start suddenly, but it would snowball, build very quickly, and the rest of the world would fully crash along with us. Now, this collapse is also noted by the U.S. Treasury Department, who agrees, and they say that if the U.S. government doesn't raise the debt ceiling, it's going to have a generational effect, meaning that a depressive economic environment could last for our entire lifetimes, which is very frightening. Now, who knows if it's going to happen around March 4th or whenever, but all I can say is that there are some major economists and the U.S. Treasury, I don't really believe anything they say, but some other major economists are saying we need to be prepared for this. Something is happening. And if Burnham's words don't send a chill down your spine, they definitely should send a chill through the markets. We have seen the Dow Jones fall 1,000 points. And this has been since its height in December, which we haven't seen it fall more than 200 points in over a year. I mean, that's its moving average. So many believe that this is just the beginning of a major stock decline. Now, Peter Schiff says the crisis is imminent. I don't think Obama is going to finish his second term without the bottom dropping out. A stock market there, the investors there are oblivious to these problems, and the global financial markets are also becoming extremely unstable. Now, for anyone who doesn't believe that we could see civil unrest here in America, like what these economists are talking about, just take a look at what happened in Seattle. People there were lighting things on fire, burning historical buildings, damaging buildings, throwing down street signs, going crazy because their team won the Super Bowl. I mean, they were acting crazy because of good news. Now, imagine what they would do, how the average American would behave if there was a total economic collapse and no one could find any jobs or any income for an extended period of time. So that's how you can imagine some civil unrest. And then, of course, just wait till the financial reality of the Affordable Care Act sets in. And then once the employer mandate kicks in, I mean, they've had a year of kind of saving grace for that. But Obamacare actually gives business owners incentive to cut hours and turn full-time workers into part-time workers. And we've already seen evidence of that happening, people's jobs turning into part-time jobs. And then for other people out there who are already unemployed, it really does not make sense for them to go and get a job because there are so many government subsidies that they can go out and get that it doesn't make sense for them to go get a minimum wage job or some crappy job when they can just get free stuff from the government. It actually is free health care when you don't have a job, which, of course, you know, we used to call that Medicaid, but I don't think that it got enough tax revenue. But obviously, our government cannot sustain that many people living off of it and needing it to be their everything and their all. So I don't know why they are trying to create that, of course, without our economy producing anything. So it's going to be a bizarre scenario. Just look at Spain, where 4.8 million people there are without a job. The suicide rates there are the highest they have been in 8 years. So we can expect to see those sudden suicide rates climbing here in the U.S. as well, as it's predicted that 2.5 million more Americans are going to be without a job in the coming decade, thanks to Obamacare. So do you think that Obama really cares about those climbing suicide rates? The suicide has emerged as the leading cause of death amongst young men in Spain because their unemployment average is about 57%. No, he doesn't care about that. And in fact, his stocks will probably go up because he's helping the globalists with their depopulation agenda. So this crash is happening all around us. They're just hoping to convince you to stay on their government healthcare and eat their GMOs and Maybe you'll just off yourself at some point. They really don't care. They really do not care about you. And hopefully in the meantime, you'll just stay distracted with their mass distraction games. This week, it's going to be the Olympics. Last week, it was the Super Bowl and all the weeks and months leading up to the Super Bowl. Of course, the place, the Super Bowl, where the Illuminati globalist symbolism is constantly on display for everyone who knows anything to see and for the sheep to just be hypnotized with this symbolism. Now they've got their MVPs falling in line, hoping to make the occult symbolism trendy and cool. Their Super Bowl MVP, Malcolm Smith, gave a press conference while he was wearing a Nike shirt that was emblazoned with the all-seeing eye and the occult Ouroboros symbol. Now, obviously, Malcolm Smith has no idea what's going on. That was quite evident by his response when Matthew Mills blitzed his press conference, his post-game press conference. He was just like, is everyone okay? No, they're not okay, idiot, because people are distracted by guys like you who have no idea what's going on, and they just allow the puppet masters to pull their strings while they destroy the world. Thanks, buddy. Woo! USA. Look at all, if those people in that stadium right there would just say, we demand GMO labeling, or we want to impeach Obama for his crimes, or vote. Just go vote. No. Instead, they just want to get drunk and cheer on these losers, idiot morons who have no idea what's going on and how they are helping to mass hypnotize the world. It's pretty insane. So, you know, what else I think is quite bizarre is that guy, you know, he doesn't have anything. He just wears the clothes because he thinks they're cool. Because Jay-Z's clothing line is like, you know, this occult symbolism is cool. Everyone thinks I'm a part of the Illuminati, so I'll just mess with them and make these clothes and use this symbolism. When historically, hip-hop and the hip-hop genre, hip-hop heads, they've been the only group of people, in music especially, who have actually questioned the Illuminati and who have said, that's Illuminati, that's this. There's a secret cabal of people ruling this society and this music industry and the entertainment industry. They were like the most vocal group asking questions. And now it seems to be the hip-hop genre who is adopting these symbols into their clothing. So it's like, you've been infiltrated, guys. Like, you were the only ones asking questions, and now you are worshiping them, paying money to put their symbols on your clothes. So that is completely bizarre. That's really bizarre. So meanwhile, while all this is going on and everyone's distracted, America is being turned into a police state. Every week, there's another story after the other. I mean, we have the Boston bombing debacle and the total failure of Super Bowl security, that was all just the beginning. Like, even though it didn't work, it's just set up to scare and police and patrol and control the average American. They're going to be everywhere. Bumbling, Barney, Fife, idiot, moron cops are going to be busting down your door just like they did to this family in Iowa. Armed militarized police smashed their way into the home of an innocent family last week when they discovered that they were being filmed on home security cameras. One officer ripped a camera right off the wall while another covered up a security camera, a second one, to prevent their raid from being documented. So why did they use this force to smash into someone's home? Without using the knock and announce required by law, mind you, they just busted in. Well, police carried out the raid in search of someone they suspected of using stolen credit cards to buy clothes and electronics. So this is what a militarized police state in America looks like. Any kind of felony, which is going to be responded to with armed raids. And then they're going to shoot another person or kill your pet. I mean, luckily the dog in that video wasn't shot on camera. That would have been awful, but it's not something that we haven't seen before. Of course, in the end, none of the items on the warrant were found, so the police had to make some kind of arrest and make their whole mission look legit. They got one guy on a probation violation, the other guy had an illegal substance, probably a little marijuana, who knows, but that's what they do. They create they've got to find something, and they will stay there and comb through everything until they find a parking ticket you didn't pay or something to justify their use of force. And that's what happens. They just, you know, they want to take you down. If they make a mistake, they're not going to apologize for it. And we just consent to this kind of brutality and this tyranny. And if you don't stand up and say anything about it, then you are giving your consent. I believe that family is going to go ahead and sue the police department since they got it all on video and the police did not knock. But again, what are we saying? Just look away. All this stuff is going on. Economic crash is coming, but just look away. Don't worry about it. Just buy into the illusion that everything is going to be fine. You don't need to go to the InfoWars store and get any survival seeds at the very least so that you can feed your family during this economic crisis. You don't need any survival gear. You know, meanwhile, FEMA is buying up, calling all the Patriot Supply and how can we get food and buying up bullets and iodine and everything they can get their hands on for some sort of imminent crisis that they're planning for. But you and I, we just need to go ahead and just buy into this illusion that everything is going to be all right and hope that they don't seize your property. You know, because police can come in and raid your home and say, oh, well, we found a little bit of marijuana and we think you're selling it. So we're going to go ahead and confiscate your home because it's involved in illegal activity, which they have done to people before. But now here we have homeowners in Connecticut who had 90 acres of their land seized by the government, not because the government wanted to use it for public use, but for economic development. Now, this case caused particular outrage because the Constitution's Fifth Amendment bars governments from taking private property unless the taking is for public use. Now, historically, public use means a road, a bridge, a public school, or some other government structure that's going to serve the public. But in the Kelo decision, the high court majority declared that economic development that would involve using eminent domain to transfer the property of one private owner to a different but more economically ambitious private owner, such as a hotel, qualified as public use. That is crazy. I mean, and that was upheld by the Supreme Court, that they said this is fine. And the big flip in that story is that this economic development never happened. The big corporations never moved in like they promised, even though they gave them huge tax breaks to bring these companies in and do all this economic development and help this town out. None of it ever happened. They just took the people's land, 90 acres of land from several homeowners. And nothing's there. Nothing is there. And the people are just, they're screwed. And that's what's happening here. And we have to allow this to happen. We can't fight back because then we'll be racist. We'll be racist against the state. We'll be racist against globalists. We'll be racist against bankster scum. And I don't know about you, but I don't want anyone to think that I'm a racist against the state. And against these guys, you know, that's why the banks give us these fake money loans at extremely high interest rates because they know we can't pay them back. And then they're going to just confiscate our property and just gobble it all back up for themselves because they love you. They love us. They love us. So while the courts are going to rule that these corporations can come in and take your land so they can build a new strip mall here, now the governments are saying that they're going to go to the moon again so they can exploit any economic wealth that could be found there. Isn't this wonderful? Of course, now other countries have shown interest in exploiting the commercial opportunities on the moon. So the U.S. has once again said, we're going to go ahead and launch a robot on the moon for the first time in 4 decades. There are already plans to explore the lunar South Pole, where it is hoped there could be abundant natural resources that would make a base self-sustaining. So NASA said that it's going to offer its expertise to any private companies that want to develop lunar explorations, but it's not going to be putting up any cash for the missions. So can you believe this? I mean, can you imagine? Look at what the globalist scum has done to this world, to this country, to all the countries in the world. They've exploited everyone for their wealth. They've destroyed everything they touch. 10,000 years of agriculture and farming can be destroyed in one generation because we've allowed companies like Monsanto and DuPont to patent seeds so they can completely monopolize the food supply, control the food supply. So 10,000 years of human evolution, of figuring out how to farm and agriculture to feed ourselves and figuring out how all this works can be destroyed in one generation, wiping out everything. And now these guys want to go and explore the moon and just screw things up in space because they, you know, they're done with this place here. We can't allow this to happen. I mean, if we sit around and don't say anything about it, then we are basically consenting to their destruction and their tyranny. And that's what they're counting on, is that we're going to sit around and be millions of people in a football stadium chanting for idiot morons who are playing a rigged game anyway. This whole game is rigged, and the only way that we are going to win is if we wake up. But just by nature of you watching this very broadcast and supporting this transmission, you are the resistance. By you waking up, by you waking up your friends and family to this rigged system, to this rigged game, we can win. We can stop these guys. We can teach people that we don't have to consent to this tyranny. Now, as the globalists are convincing everyone to go green while they are simultaneously destroying the planet, they're going to be giving you energy hikes. They're convincing you that you need to go green and save the planet so that they can tax you, so that you can pay money to Al Gore. I'm going to have a report on that coming up because it is infuriating. And I'm sure a lot of people out there who are buying economical and practical cars aren't going to be very happy with a new tax coming their way. And then we'll have an extended interview. David Knight is going to interview Jerry Peterman. David Knight is going to be talking to Jerry Peterman. He'll have a Fukushima update as well as answer some questions that you might have surrounding the dangers of radiation. So we'll be right back.
Many anthropologists and archaeologists believe that before man even discovered the power to harness and use fire, we were involved in agrarian activities. That is, taking the seeds of plants and then replanting them to produce more. The very foundation of our modern civilization and human culture is centered around the planting and cultivation of edible plants.
Here are some of the amazing deals at InfoWars Seed Center at InfoWarsShop.com. The Survival Seed Vault by My Patriot Supply features only the finest survival heirloom seeds for a robust and hardy garden, even in the toughest times. We also have starter varieties of the deluxe seed packages for fruit, salad, salsa, peppers, medical herbs, and more. Go to the InfoWars Seed Center at InfoWarsShop.com.
And remember, the revolution against tyranny is growing. Alex Jones here to tell you about how you can help spread liberty worldwide while also enjoying what I have found to be the best tasting 100% organic coffee on the planet. For more than a decade, my favorite coffee has come from the high mountains of southern Mexico, where the Chiapas farmers grow their unique shade-grown Arabica beans. We have now managed to secure these sought-after beans in a highly customized blend. Discover and try a bag of the Patriot Blend 100% organic coffee at InfoWarsLife.com. This coffee gives you a long, smooth pick-me-up for hours without the headaches and heartburn that so many other coffees give me personally. Hands down, this is my favorite coffee, and it's taken us years to secure connections directly to the Chiapas Mexican farmers. Drop by the site today, order a bag or two, and I don't think you're going to be disappointed. Available in original or with our immune support infusion blend, you will be supporting a free press, all the while enjoying a truly great-tasting cup of my favorite coffee. Available at InfoWarsLife.com.
In
In the middle of one of the coldest winters in a century, Congress is trying to sneak through a provision in the Farm Bill that'll tack a fee on home heating oil. The fee will last for nearly 20 years and then supposedly will siphon the money to the National Oil Heat Research Alliance to develop equipment that is cheaper, more efficient, and safer, and to encourage consumers to update their equipment. The bill prohibits oil companies from passing the fee on to consumers, but taxpayer advocates say that's a sham. Congress established NORA in 2000 to improve energy efficiency and lower heating bills at no cost to the U.S. taxpayer. But Representative Henry A. Waxman of California said, in the past, NORA has used the funds it's collected to primarily run public relations campaigns. Campaigns such as convincing the public that going green is vital to saving the planet. Now tell that to folks in Washington State. They're being taxed for going green. Lawmakers there are edging closer to implementing the motor fuel tax, a new system that will monitor and tax drivers based on miles driven. Drivers could be charged three ways, either with a flat fee, by having odometers checked, or with an electronic device installed in cars to measure how many miles are driven. In a dizzying twist of logic, the commission and DOT blame the prevalence of fuel-efficient cars as the reason the state now needs a per-mile tax, arguing that the move to cleaner, smarter vehicles must be accompanied by a change in the way we pay for our roads. The incentive for states to pursue this kind of program could build as cars become more fuel efficient, and especially considering President Obama wants new vehicles to get 54.5 miles per gallon by 2025. So as these new technologies are created to burn less gasoline and save the environment, the states are now concerned about the loss in revenue. The black boxes installed in cars are one major privacy concern because you're being constantly tracked. But there are also other ways this push for efficiency is leaving us incredibly vulnerable to hackers, advertisers, and the NSA, as well as soaring fee hikes. Smart meters are being touted as the innovative and advanced technology that will help conserve energy and, in exchange, lower energy bills. Right, because energy companies really want to help you cut into their profits so they can save Mother Earth. A recent poll revealed that about one-third of people who had smart meters installed had experienced bill increases, and one-quarter of those had had bills doubled, tripled, or more.
They're complete lies. The grid is not saving energy. It's using more energy, in fact. No pilot programs have been done where smart grids are saving any energy. Also, it's creating a huge hacking vulnerability. Even the former CIA director of the United States, James Woolsey, said, what we think of, what we're being told is a smart grid is actually a really, really stupid grid. And in addition to that, it's not giving us more control. It's actually giving the control to big corporations, to utilities, and to governments who will be sharing in this data that is basically being extracted from the home in a very, very high level of detail.
Just as the global warming conspiracy theory is being pummeled with historically low temperatures, so too is the energy efficiency farce, which is proving to be just another means of taxation and control.
My friends, Alex Jones here to tell you about some of the most important information concerning you and your family's health. Radiation levels have more than doubled in the last 60 years in the Northern Hemisphere. From all of the nuclear testing and radiological accidents, radioactive contamination is now in most of the food supply. There's only two ways to avoid this. Move south of the equator or properly protect your thyroid with Nascent Iodine. Looking to protect my family, I've done deep research. Nascent Iodine is the purest, cleanest, absolute best form of iodine to protect yourself and your family. It's made right here in the USA, completely non-GMO. I searched out the best quality and now have developed a double-strength form of Nascent Iodine, exclusively available at InfoWarsLife.com. Nascent Iodine is on record as one of the only safe ways to detox from fluoride poisoning. Survival Shield Nascent Iodine. Secure your super high-quality Nascent Iodine today at InfoWarsLife.com. That's InfoWarsLife.com.
We're on the march. The Empire's on the run. And the InfoWars Army is standing strong. Wake up your family, friends, and neighbors and break the matrix at InfoWarsStore.com. Learn the truth and spread the message of liberty with the world's most comprehensive collection of books and documentary films.
Maintain a healthy metabolism and energize your body to perform at peak health with Survival Shield Nascent Iodine. Protect your family and be prepared with survival foods and emergency preparedness kits. And now you can drink safe water with your own ProPure water filtration system, which removes fluoride and other harmful chemicals from your family's water supply. Save 10% with the promo code WATER. So join the revolution. InfoWarsStore.com.
Well, joining us today is Jerry Peterman. Now, he's a real Renaissance man. He's a scientist, an inventor, an entrepreneur, a writer. We're going to talk to him about some of his fiction works here, but we're going to talk to him mainly about his engineering work. Now, that's varied as well. He's got patents on wireless communication, artificial intelligence. He's done active work on DNA research, but what we're most interested there with is his work on radiation, particularly Fukushima, and trying to assess really what our risks are here in this Fukushima event. He has a site called FukushimaUpdateReport.com where he aggregates information about Fukushima and has been doing that now, Jerry, for 3 years, because almost we're up to about the 3-year anniversary of Fukushima, and it just keeps going and going and going. It's kind of the Energizer Bunny of nuclear disasters, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
It's really shiny. Now, we have a lot of viewers who like to take charge of their own health. They do a lot of research. They work to make sure that they've got food supply, that they can prepare for disaster. How do they determine what their exposure is to nuclear reaction and to nuclear radiation? We've talked about the different types. Talk a little bit about the different types of radiation.
I don't know that they can determine it, because the government has certainly raised the levels of acceptable radiation as soon as this happened, which I found very, very strange. I think the best thing to do is just not live on the West Coast. That would be the best thing to do,
right,
especially Washington, Oregon area, because that area gets the blow by from the winds across the Pacific a lot sooner than anywhere else. As far as the kinds of radiation there are, you have multiple kinds of either particulates or wave radiation.
Well, before we get to that, let's talk about, because a lot of people are confused just about electromagnetic radiation, because we do talk a lot about the negative effects of cell phones, of smart meters, of living under power lines. That radiation, electromagnetic radiation, is much different than ionizing radiation, like you're talking about alpha, beta, gamma rays, that sort of thing. So talk a little bit about that.
Well, basically, if you have radiation from cell phones or power lines and that kind of thing, that doesn't strip off electrons from your atoms. It doesn't... It's not ionizing radiation. It's capable of boiling water as in microwave radiation, but that's really it. When you have nuclear radiation, then you have the ability to destroy DNA, to strip off electrons of atoms. It's a whole different ballgame.
And of course, you can just switch off the electrical device that's producing the electromagnetic radiation, but you can't switch off nuclear radiation. That's what makes it so dangerous, that it goes on for thousands, millions of years.
That's correct. Even billions of years. In Fukushima, the depleted, well, any nuclear power plant that produces depleted uranium, the half-life, or in other words, how strong it is, if the half-life is, say, 4.5 billion years, as in depleted uranium, that means 4.5 billion years, it's half as strong as it is today. So that's pretty powerful.
So when somebody is, when we have a nuclear incident, because what happened in Fukushima could very easily happen here. We just had the former head of the NRC this last summer came out and said, it's been reported widely, the New York Times carried it, he said we need to shut down every nuclear reactor in the United States because they share the same fundamental design flaw as the Fukushima reactor. And so we could have a Fukushima anywhere in the United States. We could have multiple of these events anywhere in the United States. So if that were to happen, how does someone evaluate their exposure to that? It's not just a West Coast isolation now, it's within the United States. How do they, as an individual, how do they prepare for that, to measure that?
I'm not sure you can. An average person can't discern what a survey meter or Geiger counter what the readings mean, because you don't know. Actually, a nuclear person may not even be able to tell with a survey meter, because you can't tell what kind of radiation you're dealing with. Are you dealing with particle radiation? Are you dealing with alpha, which is a particle, beta, which is a particle, or a gamma or X-ray, proton, neutron radiation? You don't know what you're dealing with. You really have to know what isotopes have been released from that particular accident.
So there's a qualitative as well as a quantitative issue with the radiation.
Absolutely.
And you're saying that the Geiger counter just gets the quantitative aspect of it, but there's still an issue of the qualitative. So talk about the different types of radiation, like the differences between alpha, beta, and gamma radiation.
Alpha is very interesting because it's a particle. It can be stopped by a sheet of paper or by your skin. But if you get it into your body, you can end up with, say, the lungs, you can end up with lung cancer very easily. Beta is more powerful, and it has the ability, of course, all of it has the ability to strip electrons and that kind of thing, so it's ionizing. And beta is a lot more serious than alpha would be. And then you get into the various kinds of wave radiation, and that would be the X-ray or the gamma, that kind of thing. And of course, there is also, you've heard of the neutron bomb.
Mm-hmm.
That is the type of radiation. That's a neutron emitter, and that's about as deadly as it gets.
Now, the Fukushima event's been going on for about 3 years, coming up in just a couple of weeks. The concern is, now they've tried to downplay the concern by saying that it's diluted by the fact that it's going into the water. However, the reality is that it's also being bioaccumulated throughout the food chain. And that's very different. That's something you don't see with ordinary pollutants typically, like you do with radiation, because it's so persistent. It never gets metabolized. It just keeps accumulating and getting passed down the food chain. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, basically, in a bioaccumulation situation, you have tiny organisms that are eaten by larger organisms. And that goes all the way up to, say, in the ocean, to large fish like tuna, because they eat smaller fish, and smaller fish ate something smaller until it gets down to plankton. And the plankton may have just a tiny bit of radiation there, but by the time you have accumulated all of this material, you begin to have some fairly active material. I'll give you an example of bioaccumulation. We're now seeing a lot of trees and various other pollutants in southeast Texas from the lignite coal-fired plants. And I was opposed to that in the 80s of even building that, because you had, it was the 80s, because you have lignite that has a tiny amount of background radiation in it, but it accumulates at the rate of 10,000 time reduction in volume. So what was a small amount in a huge amount of material, when that material is reduced to an ash, then it becomes an accumulated amount. Yeah. And that being released into the atmosphere then is far worse than it just occurs in nature. And that's the problem with all the radiation that we have regarding nuclear power plants.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've taken something in nature that is really not very strong, and we have run it through centrifuges until we've got it down to
highly concentrated, highly refined, exactly.
And then when you start putting it together, it produces other forms of matter that don't exist in nature. For example, plutonium.
Mm-hmm.
Plutonium does not exist in the earth. We have created that through the process,
mm-hmm.
and a few other various kinds of isotopes that are created by that process.
Now, one of the things that you said that was very interesting in that, you're talking about a natural radiation that occurs in the lignite coal. We were told in California, don't worry about this radiation that you're picking up, because it's just natural radiation. It might be thorium, it might be radium. And of course, in McClellan Air Force Base, they took a lot of radium that was used for instrumentation at the Air Force, and they just buried it on the base in massive quantities, massive concentrated amounts. People were concerned about that entering the water supply. They wanted them to take it somewhere away from a population center at the very least. But instead, it was going to be inconvenient and expensive for the Air Force. So against the wishes of local government, the state government, they just buried it on site.
Doesn't surprise me at all. You remember we were talking a few years ago about burying everything, and it was NIMBY, not my backyard?
Yes.
Okay. We were going to bury everything that was accumulated from waste in the United States from nuclear power in Yucca Flats.
Yes.
We were going to go out, and we were going to encapsulate it in glass and stick it in there. We have very little left now to bury. And nobody talks about burying. Well, why don't they talk about burying? Because the government went back to their buddies and bought all the rods, and the rods were then turned into munitions, and the munitions were then dumped on in the Mideast War. So we now have 40,000 tons of material which has been dumped on Iraq and Afghanistan. Now,
so instead of burying it somewhere, we just turn it into weapons and shoot it at our enemies.
Yes, and a gift that keeps on giving, because now those people have to deal with something where they are going to have to deal with it for 4.5 billion years.
Gosh. It is just, we had talked about this briefly just before the interview, how horrific these pictures of children and infants, the birth defects from depleted uranium, and how concentrated they are in the Fallujah area. And then, of course, it's not limited to just the people of Fallujah. It also affects the U.S. Army veterans who were shooting it in their tanks. And for the longest period of time, that was not allowed in the American military. But then again, they took off that ban and they said, go for it, guys. They really didn't care about the health of their soldiers.
David, you have to remember who took it off. We're dealing with people that think Bohemian Grove and the Big Owl is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
We're dealing with people who celebrate a ceremony called the death of care. That is a misnomer. It should be the death of conscience, because it takes a person with no conscience to be able to kill forever. As I mentioned to you before the interview, we were talking about people who maybe become angry and they have a fight, and a few months or a year later, they're their best friends. It is the same with nations. We would fight a war, and 10, 15, 20 years, that's a trading partner. That's a friend again. We don't have that opportunity now with the Middle East, because that's a hot zone that nobody ever will go back to. And those people are dead forever.
Mm.
That makes no sense. And that's in the environment now, released into the environment. The only good thing about that having been released in the environment is that it is a heavy element that doesn't readily blow in the wind.
Mm-hmm.
It does to some degree, but it doesn't spread as fast as some of the nuclear material that we have from Fukushima, that lighter elements that came across.
Now, one of my concerns about nuclear power has always been the waste disposal. And as you mentioned, a massive amount of the waste disposal was weaponized and used in the Middle East. But we still have massive accumulations of it at nuclear reactor sites. And one of the things I think was unique about Fukushima was it brought to the public they realized finally that it wasn't just a nuclear reactor problem exploding that we've seen in Three Mile Island, Chernobyl, but we also had to be concerned about the safety and the perpetual care and maintenance of these nuclear storage sites that are at the site of the nuclear facilities. And that's one of the reasons that this former head of the NRC is saying that we need to fundamentally change these designs, because they're so reliant on the continuing source of power to keep not only the reactors cool, but to keep these waste pools cool.
Absolutely. Now, I said to Alex a few days ago in an interview, it's lunacy to do what we've done in the first place, because if we ever lose cooling for the nuclear power plants, these plants will go critical. Well, what would it take to lose cooling? It simply takes a large belch from the sun to produce something called a Carrington event, which is enough to shut down through electromagnetics, shut down the power grid, or fry small electronic components. For example, you couldn't get a truck started to run a diesel engine to pump water into there if all the systems had fried within the plant. Now, we've got a minimum of 711 nuclear power plants in the world, and a Carrington event could easily wipe out all the electronic systems that would control every single one of them, which means we have no way to cool any of them, And here we are with a planet-wide extinction event. It's an insane thing. But I want to come back to what Einstein said. People, a journalist once approached Einstein with the question, assuming Einstein would have been very proud of nuclear power because it was a peaceful use of nuclear. And Einstein smiled and said, it's a hell of a way to boil water.
Yeah, that's now, right. It's a massive Rube Goldberg way to boil water, one of the most complicated ways mankind has ever devised
it is,
to burn.
But there's more to that. Mm. If I, for example, went out in the backyard, took a large pot, and boiled an equivalent amount of water with heat from a fire that could be produced with heat in a power plant in a single day, I could boil water. In a year, you'd find the ashes. 10 years, you might. 100, you won't. 1,000 or 10,000 or 1,000,000, you'll never find where I boiled the water. But the same amount of water boiled for a single day with nuclear power, 4.5 billion years later, you can find that material is still half as effective as it was before. I contend that's nuts.
So other than the former head of the NRC, do you see anything, because you follow this issue very closely, do you see anybody else calling for massive rethinking of the nuclear power industry?
Oh, there are a lot of people. A lot of environmentalists are calling for that. There's a lot of, for example, I know I was on the Power Hour with Joyce Riley, and with Mr. Gunderson, and we were talking about that kind of thing, and it's the type of insanity that we need to get a hold of, and we need to get a hold of it quick. And Arne Gunderson has that opinion as well. It's just like it's an insane thing to do, and he used to be an insider who worked on these things and designed these kinds of pieces of equipment.
I just recently went to a fair where they were talking about solar power for your own backyard and a lot of other things. And they had a guy up there telling everyone that it was a real tragedy that we weren't moving to nuclear power, that some environmentalist groups had opposed nuclear power and that was going to destroy the planet because of carbon dioxide. Do you find that credible? That they would accept things like plutonium, depleted uranium, and yet choke on the idea that carbon dioxide is here, even though the plants can dispose of that. There's nothing that thrives or disposes of plutonium or depleted uranium.
No, I find that ludicrous. I think those people are completely crazy. That makes no sense at all.
Mm-hmm.
I'm shocked by that.
Yeah, but I have seen that. I've actually seen environmentalist sites saying that nuclear energy is better than solar because it has less of a carbon footprint. And they talk about creating solar panels and how much energy that takes. I mean, that's their calculus. They start from a false assumption that carbon dioxide is the most dangerous thing on the planet, which is demonstrably false. And then they extrapolate it back from that to say that the best, cleanest form of energy is nuclear. So that was my concern about it. I'm hoping that people will see the other side of this equation, really understand what's dangerous about these substances.
I'm sorry. I guess I'm a conspiracy theorist. I'd say follow the money. Who paid them?
That's right.
You know, I'm suspicious of anybody who's that stupid.
Well, there's a lot of people that are, and unfortunately they've convinced a lot of grassroots people of that too. Well, thank you so much for speaking about that. Again, your website is FukushimaUpdateReport.com. It's an aggregated site, information about Fukushima, which just keeps going. We're coming up to the 3rd year anniversary. Thank you so much for telling us how to assess some of these, well, actually, I guess we don't really have a good way to assess the danger, do we? That's really the takeaway, isn't it?
I don't think we do. And we can't believe what the government says. We have no reliable institution anymore that would give us honest answers. And that's the sad part about it. How bad it is here with that, it is millions of times worse in Japan in the sense that those people don't have anybody to speak the truth to them at all. There's millions of children that have pre-lesion cancer lesions on their thyroid now when they could have spent less than $10 million handing out some iodine tablets to the entire country and no one would be affected.
And it's not just the Japanese government, it's the American government as well. They could have given those soldiers on the USS Reagan iodine tablets.
Yes. I mean, that's that's a war crime there.
So it's very difficult to know exactly what your radiation exposure is, and there's a few things that you can do to mitigate the damage to it, like iodine, other things. But basically, it's very pessimistic if we don't get the nuclear power industry under control, would you say?
I'd say it is. This is the kind of thing where it's kind of a doomsday situation, and people have asked me if it's such a doomsday scenario, how do you deal with it? How do you possibly deal with something like that, that a Carrington event could wipe us out? And I said, well, it comes back to my my faith. It comes back to the idea that God gave us something, and it's life, it's a gift, but he put physics restraints on it. And my friend says, physics? What are you talking about? And I said, well, God kind of knew what he was doing. He says, look, you can't live yesterday, and you can't live tomorrow. You can only live today. So my attitude is, okay, if I live today, I look outside and the sun's shining and the birds are chirping and I could look at my wife and have a wonderful day. I live that day as though it may even be my last day, and I enjoy that day to its fullest. And then the next morning when I wake up and it's another wonderful day, I do the same thing. Because really all we can do is live each day the very best we can. And like I told a friend of mine, if you didn't kiss your wife goodbye going to work, shame on you.
That's really well put. I want to talk about a little bit about this book and the plot of this book. You've got a book there of short stories. You're also an author besides a scientist and inventor. This book here, let me get this here so they can get it on the camera. Tell us a little bit about this book. It's a fiction book.
Yes, it's literally is something I dreamed. It's kind of strange in that sense, but this is a type of story that questions who has right to own another human being or patent a human being. It's it's an expose, so to speak, into almost an allegory about right and wrong, in that the government wanted to create the super soldiers and were creating some kind of synthetic DNA to modify human DNA and extra chromosomes. It didn't work, and only two people survived out of 2,500 implanted embryos, and it was a horrible disaster. But the two people that survived were very, very unique, and this is their story about how they have to play a cat and mouse game with the government and get away from them, because they are considered lab rats. They're not considered human beings because their DNA is patented. Mm-hmm. And I don't buy that. I don't buy the idea that somebody can patent DNA and own another human being, but that's what it's coming to.
Oh, we're close away from it. We're very close to it. And when they could patent the genes for that breast cancer test, fortunately that got struck down. But we also see what's happening with GMO patents from Monsanto, where they can claim that if they trespass, essentially cross-pollinating onto somebody else's field, they can claim that as copyright infringement, even though it's really fundamentally a trespass. They're polluting somebody else's field.
I have this one question, David. When do we say that the ends do not justify the means? Is there any with that kind of courage? Perhaps it must ultimately and sadly fall to those exploited by the game gone mad.
That's the ultimate question, isn't it?
Yes.
We see that question so many times. We need to ask that question to the engineers who start following down these dark paths without ever looking at the ethics or where this is going to ultimately lead. They're simply interested in solving the puzzle that's put in front of them, yep, or getting the gold ring or the money or the award, whatever it is that motivates them. But they're not looking at the long-term consequences or the ethics. And that applies not just to the nuclear industry or the DNA industry, the biological industry, but it also applies to people who work for DARPA. We see horrible stuff that could possibly come down the pike from that, and we've talked about that many times. You have so many different things in your background that we could talk to you about. We could go on forever, but we're out of time. Thank you for coming in and talking to us. It's been really wonderful meeting you. Thank you very much. And again, that website that he has is FukushimaUpdateReport.com. And if you want updates not only on Fukushima, but everything that's happening in America, the police state, environmental issues, stay tuned to Prison Planet TV. Support us as a subscriber. Your subscription can be shared with up to 10 other people at the same time. It's a great way to spread the information and to support our operation here. We'll be back tomorrow at 7 Central, 8 p.m. Eastern.
Now you can watch The Alex Jones Show live as it happens at InfoWars.com/show.
You'll find links to all of our content there and a free 15-day trial for Prison Planet TV.
More than 60 movies and documentaries all in one place at InfoWars.com/show.